Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to episode 115 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. And both because the people demand it, I think, and also because it seems appropriate at this, let's call it, dramatic juncture of the 2023 Blue Jay season, I'm going to call for a vibe check, and I will, I'll at least initially here step to the side. So, Stoughton, where are the vibes right now?
The vibes are not good, Nick. It depends on what you mean about vibes or by vibes, I suppose. The vibes, I can vibe myself into some sort of denial about where this is all going. Other people, more mature people on the internet and elsewhere, I'm sure, I don't think are really up to that task at the moment, and I can't blame them for it. Not a great series the Blue Jays just played.
Yeah, I mean, that's an understatement here. We're talking about being at home, having play, and I know that, you know, playoff odds can be oversighted at times, and I'm, you know, we're all guilty of it, yada yada yada. But fuck it. Playoff odds of like 79%, having it all in front of you, playing a, you know, a Texas Rangers team that is not as bad as they've looked in recent weeks, but is by no means unbeatable. And all you kind of have to do is not this. Like, even if they had won one of the games, I think that, I mean, obviously that wouldn't have been a good outcome, but from like in terms of actually really hurting their playoff standing, they wouldn't have been in that bad a spot if they just won a single game. And not only did they not win a single game, they got absolutely butchered in three of those four games. And the one game they did not get completely butchered in, it was a game where Max Scherzer hurt himself, and he was absolutely cruising at the time too. So in a world where he doesn't hurt himself, the Blue Jays probably get torn apart in that game as well. I think it's 35-9 is the runs in the series. It is, I don't know. I mean, we often try and be level-headed. Often this podcast ends up discussing the discourse a lot. Like, sometimes I feel like we even kind of over cover the discourse as opposed to what's actually happening.
Well, I do have petty gripes that that stick in my brain about that, so that's probably my fault. But yes, perhaps you're right. Yeah,
but it just feels like the time for being reasonable is sort of over. Like, yes, like, you're right. Like, if you really want to denial your way, talk your way in, bargain, whatever you want to call it, if you want to convince yourself that this team is in the thick of it still, that this team can make the playoffs, that anything can happen in the playoffs, like, there's a million little dominoes you can line up in a row, and at the end of that row says this team could conceivably still make a playoff run or win the World Series. And it's just like, how many things would have to go right for that to happen at this point? And I know that in terms of literally making the playoffs, it's not like they've fallen way, way, way behind. There are games remaining. Many of those games are against beatable teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees. It just, I don't know how you can kind of see what you just saw when, you know, when the chips were down, all the cliches, throw them all in a bucket and think, you know what? I see these guys bouncing back. Like, it's technically true. Like, it's technically true, right?
Very
it's
much.
Technically true. It's all there. It's all in play. And we've been saying that all year long. We keep saying, listen, as grim as it seems, it's all in play for this team. And that is still technically true. But I don't know if this makes sense to you. It doesn't feel cosmically true to the point where, like, you kind of, and it's interesting because in this game, when Vladdy hit that first inning home run, it kind of felt like, okay, maybe a lot of this stuff was overblown. Like, maybe this is them showing some resilience. Maybe this is them finding a way to salvage something here. And obviously, we all know what happened after that. But at a certain point, like, there's only so much that you can ignore in the face of, like, let's be reasonable and understand all the outcomes that could conceivably happen. And we've done a lot of that on this podcast, but people in general have done a lot of that. And most of the time it's been fair. It's seeming like a weirder and weirder hill to die on, I think.
It's not a good moment. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could do this in a couple of days and maybe it would feel different. But I wouldn't bet on it. We do talk about the discourse a lot. Like I say, petty gripes that I have in my head. But to be fair to myself, yeah, the people who are calling the season over, and I'm not calling the season over right now, but the people who are calling the season over in June or whatever, don't feel they've been validated by the way that it's gone necessarily. But it feels a lot easier to sort of meander over to that space after a series like this, even knowing, as you acknowledge, and as, you know, like, they do, like, it's not over. It's stupid, and everybody knows that. Like, we don't have to, like, if people honestly thought that's it, they wouldn't watch. And then they do line up and say that's it the next day when they lose embarrassingly, which is sort of how this week has gone. But yeah, I mean, that doesn't feel like a team that deserves to be in the playoffs or deserves deserves the benefit of the doubt from us anymore. And I'm sure, you know, we all reach that point at different times. Many people have reached it well before this. But yeah, for whatever reason, for all the talent that they have, for all the reasons that they should be good, they are not. And I don't usually put a lot of stock into things like, you know, the record against above or below 500 teams. You know, I remember Berríos came, oh, you can only beat guys in the, you can only beat AL Central teams. And, you know, that kind of stuff is a little fuzzier in baseball, I think, than in other sports where you can, you know, where your athleticism and can dominate competition in different ways.
And also there's a big difference between a bad team when they've got a good starter going and a good team
absolutely.
When they're injured and they're resting guys and they're doing a bowl. Like, there's just so many iterations of what any given team can be that really, and you know, and I've mentioned this in the ALE stuff, you know, it is significant at a certain point, but those records are, I think, only valuable at the extremes, but the Blue Jays have kind of reached
the extreme.
They're
kind of at the extreme
yeah,
at this yeah. point. Yeah, it keeps happening. It keeps happening. I would not have said this when they're losing to the Orioles in May, but it does seem to have a way of happening. And that's, you know, it's sort of a sport where, you know, if they played 300 games in a season, maybe we'd see something different, but they don't, and we haven't, and they make you feel not like there's a chance that they're going to somehow start clicking finally after the months and months we've all been like, well, they should really probably start clicking at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people want to watch 10 more games of this team, let alone 300 games. You know, like, I've literally yeah. had people express to me that they genuinely don't want this team to make the playoffs, and it's not like a total, like, shithead, I hate these guys thing.
No.
But it's just like, they don't even want the opportunity to be sucked in because it's like they're just so confident it's not going to work. And maybe that's wrong. And it is funny. You mentioned, like, people who talked about this team is done in May and in June. Like, even if that ends up being true, that doesn't mean that it was a logical thing to say then. Like, it's funny because I've had some people tweet me, be like, oh,
we were right, is yeah, I think like, what we you're were trying right. to say. You were,
like, there's a lot of that out there. And I'm just like, yeah, circumstances change, I guess. I think we can agree that none of us can tell the future, but it makes more sense to, I don't know, say what seems reasonable based on the information at hand. And sometimes the information at hand leads you astray. And again, the information...
We suck is what it is, right? Yeah.
The way I'm feeling right now, for example, is that I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And I don't... Like, I think that those people, in a sense, were right because the end result seems like it's going to be what they thought it was going to be. But I don't kind of like regret, I guess, sort of believing in this team at times because there was reason to believe in it. I think that people get stuck in this hole where they think, oh, we were sold this crock of shit that the front office like brought in these absolute bums and everyone told us they were going to be good. And like, you know, sometimes that ends up with the kind of ugly Sportsnet Rogers narrative where people are accusing the team of getting too friendly coverage. And it's like, oh, everyone was trying to promote this bullshit garbage ass team and it was always doomed to fail. And like, that's not what's happened here. Like a lot of what the front office did, and you know, people are calling for Atkins to be fired, and I'm not saying that he should like keep his job under any circumstances whatsoever, but like, it's not that they put together some garbage team. Like it's just not what happened. Like they found some good pitching, you know, the guys they brought in, with the exception of Varsho, and Varsho is an exception with a bullet because his season has really not gone the way you would have wanted it to go. But the guys I brought in, you know, the Swansons, the Kiermaiers, the Belts, like it all worked really well. Like most of it worked really well. Like what happened is that the guys that they thought were going to be really good, who had been really good in the past, you know, I don't know. Why would you expect Vladdy would suddenly be, you know, worse than he was coming off a year where even the 2022 Vladdy was, you know, like a pretty damn good middle of the order type of hitter. Like it, that's the thing that I have trouble with, is this is always what was fated to happen. Like, I'm totally on board with the, like, this team has fucked it up and they're not going to make the playoffs. If that's where you are, I'm with you. I'm on the bus with you. But the idea that, like, this team has always sucked, this team was put together in a terrible way, and from the beginning they were on, you know, a dumb quest that was never going to work. You know, did you think, who here, you know, is listening, is at the beginning of the year thought, there's not a chance the Blue Jays will be as good as the Orioles this year? Like, that's not an opinion that people had at the beginning of 2023. It just isn't. Like, things have happened in a way that's really unfortunate for this team, but I don't think that necessarily means that everyone involved with this team is incompetent and it was doomed to fail from day one. Like, that's that part of it. Like, again, I'm on board with a lot of the unreasonableness that's going to be going on now. I'm with you. I'm with you. If you're thinking negative thoughts about the Blue Jays, I'm 100% with you. But I that is where I struggle, because people want to take victory laps because, like you said, in May they said, oh, the season's over, these guys are bums. And like, I just don't think that was ever really true.
I'm completely with you. I mean, might have to wear it a little bit just because those people have been right. But yeah, I don't want to ever, you know, it's not good to encourage people to jump off the bandwagon as early as possible so that they can get a victory lap. So I think it's good to, you know, to be out here being like, nah, you know, your victory lap's tainted. You were just kind of being a dickhead. It's going to be a very interesting few weeks, I think, you know, where this goes from here. They're not fully out of it as much as it feels like it. And you know, as much as I could never tell anybody that they haven't seen what they have seen. But there's still, you know, the Mariners play the Astros and the Rangers. It just feels absurd to even be talking about, you know, the nuances of the schedule and how they might, you know, be able to back their way into the playoffs. Like, I don't think anybody has any confidence that even if they did, that they would go on a run. They just, the team just hasn't shown that. And that's, you know, in a lot of ways, not a thing that, you know, baseball teams are capable of showing. And yet, I don't know, seen it all year. And, a friend of mine who goes to a ton of games, a season ticket holder, a really good friend of mine, we don't just chat idly, but sent me a message today, and he says, the thing about the Jays for me is that it's no event baseball. While you sit there ruing, expecting entertainment, as you spend money on Bud Light to save money while they blast two-second pump-up clips between pitches. It's like bad stand-up comedy. And you know what? The probably similar frustrations and just not good vibes throughout Blue Jays land all year, in maybe a similar way to bad stand-up comedy. It's been bad.
Think about the way the offense has been composed, not in terms of the players involved and what you might expect, but in terms of what it's literally been. And what it's been is this team walks a lot. They hit a lot of singles, but not when you want them to, and they don't hit home runs. How fun does that sound?
Like, it doesn't sound great.
They can occasionally steal a base, but not even anymore because their guys are like old and a little bit worn down who actually steal the bases, and you know, Merrifield isn't on base anymore and whatever.
Is Bo that old and worn down?
I mean, look at the stolen base totals. They keep coming down every year. He's pretty nice busted. No.
You know, they really should have signed Corey Seager and Marcus Semien that one. Yeah. Opportunity they had there.
Yeah, would have been good. No, it's just like, and that, you know, I wrote extensively today on this sort of fun, and it's not like we haven't discussed this before, but this sort of fun factor surrounding this team and how, you know, the team, let's say, I don't know how many wins they finish with, like the team will finish with, let's say, like 7% fewer wins than you would have wanted, potentially 8%. And in the context of baseball and where they are in the win curve and stuff, like that's huge. That's meaningful. It's the difference between people keeping their jobs and losing their jobs in some cases, teams making the playoffs, winning the World Series. I'm not trying to minimize that. But the difference between them as an entertainment product, as a conduit for enjoyment, has dropped like 73%. I don't know. I'm just pulling a number out of nowhere. But like, yeah. Like as much as the season is a disappointment from a literal results standpoint, it is so much more disappointing in the experience of following this team. The experience of following this team has not been fun for people who have a stake in the team. Like, it is not a good product. And it part of it, like I said, is like the composition of the offense, the fact that pitching and defense is great and you can appreciate it as someone who loves baseball, but at the end of the day, you know, getting things to not happen is just never going to be as exciting as doing things. Like, that's just the reality. Exactly. Like, a lot of the times, you know, what great pitching is forcing a guy to pop something up that people would catch 97% of the time, or the action of not walking somebody, or, you know, run prevention can be a person not making an error. It's like, wow, it's crazy that Davis Schneider made that routine play that didn't blow up the entire inning. Like, that's amazing. What an outcome. And so, like, that, it literally is. And then, so that's even just between the lines. And then outside the lines, you know, the loss of Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez and the home run jacket. And it just... people want
The beloved home run jacket.
The beloved home run jacket. Well, again, depends on who you talk to. But people want to feel like, when people are watching sports, in a lot of cases, they want to have sort of a vicarious feeling of like they're feeling what the team's feeling. And when they feel like the team is having fun, it increases the amount of fun they're having. I don't know if that sounds overly simplistic, but I think that's the reality of it. And so when you, at the very beginning of the season, sort of put your foot down and say, we're serious now. Like, we are not about some of the things that you guys used to like about us, but we're cutting a deal with you. Some of this stuff is going to go away, but we're pretty sure it's going to lead to some better results on the field. And, you know, I think that was probably bullshit all along. And, you know, the Teoscar and the Lourdes stuff, a lot of that's about defense too. I'm not saying that just booted them out of town because they were fun dudes. But they clearly, in terms of some of the people they brought in, Brandon Belt accepted because he's a great guy. He's
MVP.
He's a, you know, a vibes MVP of one of the worst vibes teams in the league. But when you make that contract with your fan base, you say, listen, we're going to take this away and here's what you're going to get. You're going to get a team that is a serious contender that's going to win in the playoffs. And then the team is just worse than it was before. Like, that is really tough for people to stomach. It's like, oh, we used to have this good, flawed team that was a lot of fun. And now we have a, you know, maybe less good, at least as flawed team that just has none of that kind of enjoyment bubbling around it. Like, that is, I think, as much a part of it as the whole, you know, as the expectations around the team, you know, what they're going to do in the playoffs and stuff. It's just people feel a little bit cheated with what they've got with the 2023 Blue Jays. And it goes beyond what's happened in terms of wins and losses. It goes to the entertainment product, and the product sucks.
Absolutely, it sucks. I might simplify it even more. And I was tweeting today, as I am wont to do, with Joshua Howsam, who's a wonderful follow on Twitter, and joking about we were pining for the days where the Jays had an elite offense and a tire fire bullpen. But when you actually think about how the vibes of a game, or just how the game is portioned out, it's like, you know, it's just less entertaining and less fun to be like, oh, they're down two runs, now we're in a nightmare for the next seven innings, as opposed to being like, oh, they can come back, whatever. Ah, the bullpen blew it at the end, but whatever, it was okay for a while. You know, like just the your happiness level during the one game versus the other is completely different. And, you know, one team, you know, the team with pitching and defense maybe, you know, set up better to win Major League Baseball games and perhaps entirely to win in the playoffs. But that feeling of of dread about how are they going to overcome this 2 or 3 run deficit has been present in so many innings this season, as opposed to, you know, the 2021 team where, you know, they had pitching issues, but it never felt like the games were as finished in the fourth inning, you know. And I think that you know, absolutely contributes to it. And because, you know, we're just, and I, this is why I, as much as I like to poke at strawmen and get, you know, the fans are doing it wrong, you know, people are out here giving this team, I mean, it's not, I was going to say 3 hours, it's not, it's like 2 or 2.5 hours now, but still giving this team 2 hours of their nights every night, and then their attention otherwise, you know, reading about them, following all this stuff. And, you know, for it to be, they're down two in the third, here we go, it's going to just be a nightmare to see them try to catch some runs in. It's not fun, as we can all attest.
Yeah, I mean, even watching the game tonight on Thursday, when they were in that 4-2 spot, my feeling was, if they give up another run, it's done. Like that, yeah. That was my mindset. It was like, oh,
well, and that's why you bring in Trevor Richards.
Yeah, and he's an absolute shutdown guy down the stretch. And he's, oh man, I mean, again, we don't need to it's so much bigger than how shitty that game was.
100%. We'll have time to litigate John Schneider's worthiness of this job over the long, cold winter.
I got a feeling it could come up.
It might.
So, even to put some numbers to what you're saying, right? I'm looking at 2022, and 2022, you know, it had its disappointments, but they had 41 comeback wins and 31 blown leads. 2023, and we're not at the end of the season yet, so maybe this will wildly change.
I doubt they're getting to 41.
Well, they're 34 comeback wins, which is more than I would have guessed.
But, absolutely.
But probably some of those comebacks are, you know, a single run. It, you know, have to drill down on it.
Because every game was 4-3. Yeah.
But then they have 32 blown leads. So it's like you are blowing more leads than ever. But you know what I mean? Like, you haven't taken a step forward in that kind of component of fan dread. And you've heaped another one on where, as you say, people feel like the game is over when they're down 2-3 runs in the fifth or the sixth. And yeah, that is definitely, you know, a less fun way to go about it. It is, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because people could easily have this heavy layer of cognitive dissonance where, let's say for whatever reason, they go 12-4 down the stretch and then they'd make the playoffs and do something. Again, this is a possibility you've brought up before, and I'm more dismissive of it today than I've ever been.
Each week it gets weirder and less likely, but yeah.
But in that scenario, which I genuinely at this point believe will not happen, in that scenario, people might be able to have cognitive dissonance and be like, oh yeah, the 2023 Blue Jays, they could really pitch. It was, Kevin Kiermaier, Dalton Varsho catching everything, and, you know,
well, 2015, everybody forgets the first 4 months of that season, which were a drag.
For sure. And, you know, 2016, where the team suddenly, you know, the offense declined and the pitching improve. Like, that was a product that people are probably more fond of in retrospect than they were at the time, because there's a lot of disappointment associated with
yes, there was,
with the way that some of these guys had fallen off. And so it is weird that, you know, this moment in history, this very kind of, you know, probably not that significant in the grand scheme of like the Blue Jays franchise, there is the possibility that it just totally gets forgotten, but I don't think it will. I think that the 2023 Blue Jays will go down as a team that people are really upset about, which is, you know, to be fair, I saw some tweets today where someone was like, is this the most disappointing Blue Jays team ever? And I was like, no, absolutely not. I mean, you can look back at 2013, like, imagine, you know, all of the hope in that team would break this huge playoff drought, and the fact that they
don't have to imagine it, yeah, lived through that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just funny to me, because it's like literally changed one digit in this. And I can think of it. And I'm not even going back deep into some of the Blue Jays.
Well, I'm old enough to remember 1987 a little bit.
Well, it's funny, Buck was talking about that at the end of the broadcast. It's like at the end of these games when they don't have anything to say about the game anymore, or even the situation, right? Like, they've kind of touched on everything. The Blue Jays sucked. They sucked all week. This is a bad spot. You know what I mean? There's only so much content. You know, we're at about 25 minutes here. Who knows? But they have a lot more to do than we do. So there's so much time. And so at the end, he just started kind of rattling off other dark moments in Blue Jays history. And it's like that kind of shows you where you're at when the broadcast is like, you know what? We've really hammered how bad this is. Let's talk about some other times that were bad. And I don't know if that was designed to make people feel better, or if it was just like a kind of a last resort. But either way, I thought it was funny.
Were any of them uplifting? I assure you, I had the TV off by that point. Like, are there uplifting moments like that? Like, for example, there's this plucky team, the Texas Rangers, who lost like 15 or 20 games like not that long ago, and they seem to have turned their season around.
It's true.
It can happen.
It can literally happen. I do want to talk about some other things besides just how shitty all of this is, because I don't want to be super repetitive. And, you know, what we're pivoting to now is not exactly uplifting per se. But I think kind of the biggest news item since we last spoke was the latest. I don't know. It feels like every week we have a podcast, there's just like a Manoah bullet point in here, because something changes just slightly. And I think this time something changed a little bit more significantly, because the first we got the news that Manoah would be shut down for the season, sort of confirmed, that was from friend of the show Ben Nicholson Smith, and I don't think anyone was surprised. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, we didn't really think he was necessarily going to pitch at this point. And then we got a Ben Wagner appearance, and Ben Wagner is not like a provocateur. He's not someone who's like,
yeah,
out there trying to make waves. And in fact, there was some, I think, very stupid discussion about him kind of getting sent out there to deliver a message. And I just don't think that that's at all what he's about. Anyway, whatever. We don't need to litigate Ben Wagner. Ben Wagner,
read manufactured consent. It's not how that works.
In my experience, Ben Wagner is a great dude, and I don't think that he's doing anything nefarious.
No, good Lord.
But basically, he came out and said, listen, the delayed report to Buffalo was, you know, the two sides here, Manoah and the team, had a difficult time agreeing on a course of action. And then he got sent to Buffalo, and he basically hasn't, you know, he hasn't even done any side action. Like, it's not like, oh, we haven't been watching him pitch in games or whatever, but he's working. He's kind of, I forget what he said down there, going through it, which was, I don't know, quite the revelation. Sounds a little bit dramatic. I think it's something we all sort of suspected might be the case, but it felt unfair to just say, oh, he's sulking, he doesn't want to do it. Like, I think that people jumped down his throat on that. And again, you can ultimately be right, but not be going about things the right way. And I think that it was fair to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. And then there's a story about the, you know, he was doing a bunch of medical testing, which did make some sense in the, you know, if he had such an inexplicable season, it's not crazy to think like, oh, maybe they should kind of take a look at him physically, see what's going on. It seemed a bit odd, but there was no like, oh, this is all definitely bullshit. And it seems like it kind of was, and we're in a bit of an odd spot with Manoah now.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that he never went on the IL yet, they were talking about medical stuff, is suspicious, but that sort of preys on the fact, and I mean, preys, they probably are not smart enough to prey on anyway, but like, it is related to the fact that people, you have to dig into the CBA to even know, like, I mean, non-work or work-related injuries obviously get to be public and get to go out, you know, and have to sort of be disseminated in a way, and there's rules and boundaries that they can't cross. But what is the process for, you know, if somebody has a real medical issue that is non-work related, what is that? We ran into that with COVID, you know, and there was always sort of a tricky sort of navigation of that. And I think I wrote this week, like it was kind of an effective strategy because, you know, yeah, you do want to pull back. And I think you're right. You don't want to, you know, people could have been very much more cynical and demanding of answers about it. But, you know, the fact that the team was saying, and that Manoah wasn't saying anything, that these, you know, with medical testing, you know, we're looking at these things. People remember Ricky Romero, and there's all sorts of stuff that, around that, that makes you think, okay, maybe this is something that, you know, he'll say it when he wants to say it, or when he, you know, it's not really our business, because none of this shit really fucking matters anyway. So that's fine. You know, I don't think that it would have made sense to go, you know, banging down doors trying to figure out what's really going on. But the injured list thing and the fact that he wasn't on it definitely sticks out. The fact, and I wrote this week as well, the fact that Ross Atkins mentioned, you know, when he had that scrum, the sort of impromptu one after the trade deadline that addressed the Manoah stuff a bunch, he mentioned that the league had been involved, which I got it wrong, but I did clock them. Like, okay, this means that there's sort of a grievance process probably going on, which definitely feels like that's what, you know, based on what Ben Wagner was saying, that you know, that's what it is. He didn't want to get sent down. My instinct was to look at the Super 2 status and to look at the money thing, because we know that he's had also issues in the past. You know, he didn't want to take their mere small increase over the league minimum, felt that he deserved more, and sort of fought that with Bo Bichette as well. And this is something that he's attuned to. I'm not saying we don't know that it's the money thing necessarily, but it definitely does feel like he didn't report and didn't want to get demoted, and this is what's going on. Is where we're at, which is a shame, and his right if he thinks he's been screwed with in terms of, you know, his labor, but also, come on, man.
It's not. I mean, like, it's absolutely not. It's just not. And like, it's you can put yourself in someone's shoes, and you can see, you know, the Blue Jays fucked with Vladdy, like they did. Like, I don't think I don't think it's outrageous to say that. They pretended that he learned deep.
They got out of it because he got injured right at the start of that season, and then they kind of got away with not having to answer that question.
Yeah, but that was the idea.
They could have called him up the year earlier as well. Generational bat.
Yeah, messianic, I think, is that's the word.
You've seen the Fangraphs page.
Yeah, so... You know, I understand from a player's perspective, they have every reason to be skeptical that the team is doing everything it can to save some money. Because teams do what they can to save some money, and they think about service time, and they manipulate service time, and some are more or less subtle about it than others. But the reality is that he sucked. Like, he was bad. And not only was he bad, like, Ryu was good. Like, it wasn't like they were putting in Casey Lawrence. Like, they had this good option appear out of nowhere in the middle of a very tight race. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that the Toronto Blue Jays would have absolutely loved for Alek Manoah to have a fantastic 2023 season. If he had done that, they might be in a very different spot today. But the idea that he might, and again, like, we're hypothesizing on what his issue might be, and so I don't want to go too far down that road, but the idea that there was any service time manipulation here is ludicrous. And maybe they wanted to get kind of a phantom IL thing for him such that he could collect that service time, and maybe that was something they thought would have been a reasonable compromise in this situation. And you could argue that that would have been a reasonable compromise, but also you can argue, like, why should the team go out of its way to spend millions more dollars to placate someone who's not performed? Like, it would be a weird under the table deal to strike, to be like, hey, I suck, you have a better option, why don't you just put me in the IL for a while so that you can pay me a lot more later? Like, it's just, I don't know why a team would say yes to that unless they were truly terrified of the player and the player leaving or whatever. But they've got Manoah for many more years. This is not like an NBA situation where we have one central superstar who's signing 2 years contracts and keeping you totally in their pocket the entire time and threatening to leave. There's just no leverage for Manoah longer term. And so it's just, I don't know. Like, again, he hasn't spoken on what happened. We don't know all of the details, but as long as we don't know the details, like, he is going to look, yeah, he's going to look petulant in this. He's going to look like someone who couldn't accept the reality of the situation. And that's unfortunate for someone who's built up like a ton of goodwill with the franchise, someone who's likely to, hopefully for the Blue Jays' sake, find something in the years to come and be a big part of this team. It is a very peculiar situation, and maybe he'll do something to clear it up. But, you know, it hurt the Blue Jays because they didn't have a sixth starter option, and we're seeing Trevor Richards down the stretch here. I don't know if someone had got injured and Richards had been kind of forced into that four-inning duty, how well that would have gone. Probably not great. Like, so and then there was a time that he was holding a spot in Buffalo, and that was kind of messing with that team. Like, it, not that people really have to care about the, you know, the competitive prospects of the Buffalo Bisons, but it just, you know, it just comes off as someone who's not particularly concerned about what he can do for his team. And you know, as, you know, people who are workers, like, generally speaking, you are more concerned with your own, the value of your own labor than what you can do for your own employer. But, you know, there is a team element to sports that makes it just a little bit different than that.
Yeah, and a collective bargaining agreement. You got a strong union, buddy. Like, and I don't think you got much of a leg to stand on if that's what this is, which it absolutely, you know, really seems like. I tend to wonder, you know, because the Super 2 thing, you know, would have been an issue with the first demotion, and because Ryu wasn't there at the first demotion, maybe that's what's really more upsetting to him than the second one, or, you know, that maybe this was going on for a longer time. But yeah, it's, I would love to see him clear it up. I would love to see this, there be a neat little bow to put on this, and things can go back to normal between everybody, you know, the team and the fans and him. People really like him, and understandably so. You know, you see him buying computers for kids, and he's just an affable, you know, young, fun guy. You want to cheer for him. And this is really going to hurt him and, you know, and his relationship with the fans as well as the team. And hopefully that matters because he comes back and pitches well and can figure that out. But yeah, it's a weird situation. And, you know, when I wrote about it, when just, you know, transcribing the Blair and Barker thing, like Kevin Barker, who, you know, as everybody knows, you know, was a yo-yo guy, to put it politely, was not in the big leagues a ton, but like grinded a minor league career, for a long, long time, and his reactions were fucking priceless, because so many of these guys don't have the chance to have their camp negotiate a demotion or not, or that it's just not even in the worldview of somebody like him, or, you know, and that this is, it speaks to, I think, a thing that does exist in baseball, which is that there are favored guys and not, and it, you know, it starts with the bonus babies, you know, the guys at, you know, college and the draft and high school who get the big bonuses. That, you know, this is part of the Davis Snyder story, right? He's not a high pick, not a guy that anybody really gave a shit about, and had to, you know, hit his way all the way here to the big leagues. And that's just, you know, you hear over and over anytime you talk to people in the game, or just even follow it a little bit, you know, that there tend to be different rules for guys of different bonus structures. And, you know, Manoah in going along with Bo, no, completely don't disagree with them there. And then that's a poor system. The system is structured poorly for guys, pre-arb guys. And, you know, if he's getting Cy Young votes and is going to make the league minimum, that is absurd. And I understand, you know, the principled stance there. But, you know, it's, expecting to get treated differently. And I think this is still kind of going on, you know, like, is Matt Chapman going to play every goddamn day? Like some guys, you know, everybody should be treated equally, whether you're Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Ernie Clement, you would think, but that's not necessarily how that happens. And Manoah, I think, felt perhaps rightly that he was in the tier of players. And again, yeah, we're speculating. I'm obviously like, I don't know what the hell is really going on. But the way I think about it is perhaps that he, you know, understandably so, because he's been validated by the industry, because he's got the Cy Young votes, because he's got the commercials. He's the, like, I'm of the Vlad tier where I don't have to hit sixth, even though I've been dog shit for 2 months. You know, I don't have to take a demotion. I'm your opening day starter. Some validity to thinking that way. And yet it was an untenable situation. It was a situation that I think went on, a lot of people would say. I mean, I generally tend to not, you know, give a lot of rope to struggling players, but people were calling for him to get demoted or something to be done about that for several starts before he actually went down. Like, it became untenable.
Yeah, they gave him a chance to work it out at the major league level, and I think he thought, like, I am a big leaguer, I'll figure this out, and it's kind of like my right to do it at the big league level. And there are teams that will carry, like, struggling stars for a very long time based on previous achievements and all that stuff, but you know, he had options, and the Blue Jays offense was struggling, and it was, and especially on that second time when they had Ryu, they just had appealing alternatives. And it's just, yeah, I think that the only thing that could change the complexion of this situation would be if there is some kind of significant, like, mental health sort of hurdle. And, but, like, I don't know. I saw Schneider's comments about it. He said at the current time, he feels not ready to compete. We're working through every decision with him together as a group, respecting his requests along the way. That sounds like PR speak to me. Like, I think 100%. That's my 95% chance read on it. I think there's a slight chance, again, because, you know, we're speculating here, and I do want to be fair to the possibilities that are out there. There is a possibility that there's some kind of mental health struggle related to the difficulties associated with this season and when he was demoted the second time, and maybe, you know, him having an issue there. What I would say about that, though, is that if that's the case and you want the situation, you want people to treat that with the empathy that it deserves, you need to put that out there in those terms and in that way. Because
players have done that.
And I'm not saying that that's easy to do. I understand that that's a difficult thing to do. And as much as society is changing, as much as the world of sports are changing, like, it is still a place where it's difficult to do something like that. But you can't necessarily get me over my skis assuming it's going to be something like that and giving you all this empathy in advance. Like, this is what happened with Roberto Osuna. And I'm not saying that, you know, Alec Manoah is Roberto Osuna. I'm absolutely...
I hope not,
this is not the position of the podcast. This has been a very pro-Alec Manoah podcast. And again, sometimes the personal memories get into it. But, like, I remember I was at this pitch talk event and we were in the middle of that Manoah fog and haze in terms of what's going on with him, and sort of the idea of this being a mental health issue had been floated. And I remember giving kind of a quasi-impassioned defense about, like, how serious anxiety can be and how people need to give him room and rope. And you know, it was to the point where, like, my parents actually reached out to me afterwards and were, like, concerned about me, because they figured that, like, me talking about this was right. An indication, like, this was something that was happening with me. And, like, you know, again, the fact that Roberto Osuna made me look like an idiot once is far from tragic. But I'm just saying that, like, if this is what's going on, I have all the sympathy in the world for Manoah. I could absolutely understand that. Like, this has been a very difficult to predict, and, you know, his career, his livelihood has been altered in a radical way this season, the way he perceives himself, all that stuff. I could envision something like this arising, but I don't think that he needs to be given, like, the benefit of the doubt that that's what's happening until there's more evidence for that, because right now, as we speak today, it does seem like the most likely thing is, you know, is a matter of kind of sulking, is a matter of being concerned about the Super 2 status and all that jazz. And, like, part of it, too, is if you go down to Buffalo and you take your demotion, it's an opportunity to work. Like, it's an opportunity to get back on your feet, an opportunity to help figure it out, which you'd think that he would be motivated to do. Like, nothing has been working all year. Why not have a couple weeks in AAA and, like, try some shit and try and enter 2024 feeling better about yourself? Like, this, you know, I mean, saying something's like an opportunity, like going to work is an opportunity, like, sounds like very boomer, but it's true. Like, if the chance to pitch professionally, even not at the major leagues, could have had some value for Manoah, and it seems like it's been frittered away for what, again, you know, a lot of seems, a lot of speculation, a lot of probably, but it appears that it's been frittered away for kind of silly reasons here.
It does. And it, I mean, and the unfortunate thing, or sort of a grotesque thing, is, you know, like you say, you know, the mental health thing, which, you know, everybody could obviously see the way that his body language was, the way he was affected by his struggles earlier in the season. Easy connection to make. And it's kind of fucked up that, you know, that has been allowed to be part of the mystery here, right? Like, that's like, fuck off. Like, that shit's serious. Like, don't let people think that. Like, he doesn't have to say what's, you know, what's what. Maybe, you know, if he doesn't have to come out, and nobody needs to know what's going on with anybody in their personal life like that. These are athletes, so we enjoy watching them on the field, and that kind of should end it there. It doesn't, I know, but it's a little weird. It's a little weird that you know, as part of the strategy, I don't know who concocted it. I don't know if it was mutual. You know, Atkins has said, it's, you know, everything has been mutual. I don't know if that's true. Manoah's camp and Manoah haven't really spoken about what's going on. But the official story has been, you know, medical testing. And that has led to these kind of questions. And that has led to people being reluctant to really poke too hard there, which, whatever, fine. But you know, it is kind of gross to let people think, well, maybe that's what it is. If it is or it isn't, really. Like, I mean, but if it's like if he's holding out, like if it's like a contract holdout, and you're allowing people to really genuinely be concerned about what's going on with him, you're in a tough place. I know a lot of people, you know, everybody's ready to, you know, take their pitchforks and torches down to the Rogers Center at this point, but. It is not an easy thing to handle. This is not the Anthony Bass thing where there's some obvious like way that they have very, very poorly handled it. I think, that's one that I kind of question, is, you know, what the cover story was, I suppose, but also, you know, I don't know, you shouldn't even have to concoct a cover story. Manoah should have reported to Buffalo. And like you say, should have got some work in, should have followed through on the super motivated, super gamer kind of personality that he has, or persona that he has cultivated, and got back on the mound and like done whatever he could to get ready for next year. And the fact that he hasn't been pitching is not only disappointing in the sense of, you know, this whole thing is a mess, it's affecting the Jays, or it would if they were a playoff team, which obviously we discussed earlier, they're garbage, it doesn't matter, but like, that's an important piece of depth. Like, your number six starter in September is very important, because if something happens, you need a guy to be there, and he, you know, kind of flaked out on that, allegedly or speculatively. That's a thing, and that's going to affect how his teammates are, and like you say, you know, his career has been changed radically, and I don't even know if we know how it has been changed yet. We, you know, there's so much that's mysterious about this. But again, going back to like the way Barker reacted, it's like, yeah, what the hell? Like, the reaction in the clubhouse, I suspect, if it is what Ben Wagner reported that it was, and I have no reason to doubt that, can't be good. You know, the Kevin Kiermaier, when he went and, you know, he made that impassioned speech.
Oh,
that,
man.
You
know, talk about someone not aging well.
That preceded some doom there a little bit. But, like, you know, he said, he specifically, you know, this is what they've been working for all year. And to have someone just be like, nope, I'm mad about a demotion, something that, except for a handful of guys on that team, have all gone through, can't sit well. And that's another element of how this is, you know, just a weird thing that I suspect we will be talking about for more than the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and like, as you mentioned, the messaging around this it's leaving room for speculation in a way that there hasn't. Yes. There does not need to be. And it doesn't, like, let's say the most generous interpretation, like Alec Manoah has gone through some kind of mental health issue that makes him feel like performing, you know, to use Schneider's words, but whatever, like getting on a mound right now is not productive for him. Totally possible. Like the way that you message that is to say, like, it's been a difference. It's been a difficult season for Alec. He's going to take a step away from the game right now. We don't really see, I don't know, the use in having him in AAA. You could even be like, he's a big leaguer. He doesn't have anything to learn from AAA ball. Like, we're just resetting with him for next year. Yada, yada, yada. Like, you can say
that. Lots of ways to
that in a way that is not necessarily explicitly saying what's going on with him or being unfair with his privacy in any way. Or, alternatively, if it is him just being...
Or you could say he's been at the doctor's for 4 weeks.
But if... yeah, geez. Or if it's a situation where, like, he's basically rejecting the demotion, you don't necessarily have to cover him for him, for one. Like, you could kind of be honest with that if you want to do that. If you want to try and have a PR battle, which you can win, which is not something the Blue Jays can always do. In this case, they could win that PR battle. Yeah. But it's like, I don't know, it just seems like they've messaged it in a very murky way that leaves room for uncomfortable conversations that no one necessarily needs to have. And it's, yeah, like you say, it is something that we will be monitoring closely in the weeks to come, kind of as Manoah has been all year, as sort of an undercurrent to this, this shitty 2023 Blue Jays.
Yeah, honestly... I'm much happier talking about this horrible, weird situation than reminding myself of what's happened on the field in the last few days.
That's a reasonable stance. We are going to leave it there. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Happy Hour. We will be with you again next week. As always, we appreciate any reviews and subscriptions and all the clicky buttons that work across various apps. We don't really understand, but it's all good for us, and maybe when we speak next time, it will be a less dire moment for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think almost by default, it would have to be.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.